It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal, a time where we get together with Cynthia Hosswinder and Janet Manco. Good morning, one and all.
Good morning. Can we call you M&M now?
Everybody's there. All right.
Yeah. No, it's not now. It happens from time to time.
Yeah, it happens from time to time. Well, anyways, good morning, and thanks for joining us. You guys, we will go right to the paper. And you have, we spoke once again with Dr. Mark Herko last week and early this week, COVID-19 and how it's affecting the hospital and the schools. Some schools are actually going to distance learning because there's not enough teachers, and it's a hard split. And also with hospitals now, because this is affecting the whole country, nurses, a shortage of nurses, and that's a real big problem.
It's a big problem, and it was already a big problem before COVID, and now an even bigger problem.
Yeah.
And one of the additional challenges is not only are our frontline workers being infected and or there are fears of them being infected, but also when you have elderly people at GEER and at Noble and their families can't really get to them, I think most people know, even if you're in a 24-hour facility with great staff, many people also choose to have additional care come in and help because the staff just can't get to everybody at every moment that they need help. If you've ever had a loved one in a retirement facility like that, you know that there are moments when you really wish, gosh, I wish I could be there all the time to help them get to the bathroom or whatever their need is. It's becoming very, very hard to get that around-the-clock care because families can't get in there on their own, and it's hard to say to somebody, can you go visit my loved one three times a day at their facility where there is perhaps an elevated positive case rate. So it's a huge, big deal, and it's not hard enough to be old. But also, of course, for school nurses, Deb Alexinas did a great job of talking to our retirement communities, to Sharon Hospital, and to the schools. The schools seem to be holding on pretty well. They have really dedicated nurses at all the campuses, which is great. But another reason for us to think about the importance as we all age of having new nurses come up.
You know, I'd be beside myself. My mother was at GEER for 2 years, the final 2 years of her life. I visited her three times a day for an hour, hour and a half. I had Salisbury visiting nurse come up and visit once a day, and also Meals on Wheels, just so every 3 to 4 hours during the daytime hours and stuff like that and into the evening, she would have visitors. And I really don't know. I would be beside myself if it was now, because it's hard on the person that's in the facility, but it's even harder on the person who wants to get into the facility. It's not a good time. And by the way, all these facilities are doing the best they possibly can.
Right.
People shouldn't hold it against these facilities, is all I'll say.
And if you've ever been, as you know from having been in a facility with a loved one, sometimes everybody needs care exactly at the right moment. Everybody needs help getting into the dining hall, or suddenly everybody wakes up and they all need to go to the bathroom at the same time. And there's just not enough people.
Yep, it's amazing. Now, another story that we covered with Mark Herko was the mask story. And I'm very surprised about the story you've got on the front page of the Lakeville Journal. It's also from Whitney Joseph, of course, the Millerton News. And that is the anti-mask debate. And, the problem with this, Cynthia and Janet, is masks and COVID-19 has now become a political football and not a health issue.
Yeah, and this is a friend of mine who had this bad experience. I've actually had a few people report to me that they've been kind of bullied or targeted for wearing a mask or for, doing social distance, which just seems so illogical. But we're talking about the Talk of the Town Deli, which is actually right across the street from the Legion in Millerton, which has a big, lit sign outside saying, you have to wear a mask. But I think that there's a certain portion of society that, especially up here in the country, where people sort of feel like, I'm going to do what I want to do, and don't require me to do anything, and I'm not sure that I believe this. And you can believe or not believe a lot of science or a lot of religion or philosophy or whatever, but in this moment, there's the concrete issue of the mask. And so Talk of the Town had a policy of, if you feel uncomfortable being around people who aren't wearing a mask, then maybe this is not the right place to come to. and somebody wandered in there not sort of getting that this was going on, and she had a very bad experience where she felt very threatened by a couple of people there. So Whitney did a good job of talking to the owner of Talk of the Town, who doesn't feel like she's done something wrong. She sort of feels a little bit like she's a bastion for people who have this attitude. So it's an interesting conversation, and really requires us all to sort of try and get into somebody else's head. But I think the bottom line is, there's 3,000 deaths, I think, yesterday from COVID, and masks are a good thing.
I think if somebody from the state of New York or from the county of New York reads this article, they're going to get a visit, because you can feel as you want as a business person, but the ability to remain open, you have to follow whatever the rules are for that county's health department. So
right, and they did get a fine, but I think Whitney looked into the fine, and we couldn't find out the exact fine that they got, but it was, the lowest fine is $250. So I think if you're a business and you feel very strongly about it, as sometimes happens in situations, sometimes people will just eat the fine. But the staff now that works at the restaurant is all masked. It's just the patrons.
All right. Another story that is a big story, and that is Housatonic Valley Regional High School, just Housatonic, not the elementary schools, is going all remote until January 19th. When we spoke with Ian and of course the superintendent, Lisa Carter, that's a date to pick, because hopefully by then Thanksgiving and Christmas will be reflected in the COVID numbers, and they'll have a better idea.
Yeah, a lot of schools actually I've heard of across the state are doing this. And so the thinking was, three students came back testing positive after Thanksgiving, and Ian Strieber, the principal of Housatonic Valley Regional High School, and Lisa Carter, the interim superintendent for the Region 1 school district, which encompasses the six area towns, said that they were also concerned because, I think Steve Sheeby, also the assistant principal, said this, they were concerned because students are gathering socially or in study groups outside of the school, and that it's not possible to control or to know who's going to potentially infect whom. So they decided, because coming back from Thanksgiving, that there was this elevated number of positive cases, that there's going to be a need for a two-week quarantine, and then to have everybody come back on campus for a short period right before Christmas, and then have Christmas when you have the potential same issue with, families are going to get together, and there's a lot of people being in close proximity of people who are outside of somebody's normal pod. So the date of January 19th is essentially a full two-week quarantine after Christmas.
It's very disruptive. And one of the things that Ian pointed out, which was interesting, that I didn't even think about, that the number of people choosing to go to remote learning has gotten so high now for the teacher that's in the classroom, it's very hard now with so many people on monitors to equally distribute their attention to both the people in the classroom and those that are home monitoring.
Right.
So there's a lot of things you don't realize that go on that these teachers, and I give credit once again to the administrations and the teachers and everybody at all the schools in our region. I think they're doing an outstanding job.
Yeah, this is all new, and they're reacting to it as we go along. And so, it's such a challenge, but they're amazing in dealing with it.
And everybody's being very transparent about it, and that's so, so important.
Kudos to Lisa and to Ian for always responding to calls from our reporters.
A story that I got
let me,
it.
Let me jump back to that for one more second, which is the holiday store at Hootsie is still open, but there are no students working there. There's only school staff. But they got cleaned out almost immediately after opening, and I've heard that this happened at another place in, I think, New Hartford. So a lot of people up here, it's hard to know whether there's more people buying Christmas trees and it just sold out, or if people just bought earlier. But the high school is trying to decide if they should order more trees or not. So if you know that you haven't bought your tree yet and you want to buy one at Housatonic, which has phenomenally good trees, give them a call and let them know that you're still thinking about it. I think they have, as of yesterday, they had 60 trees left. But we also yesterday did the most wonderful video workshop at Housatonic in the FFA department. David Moran organized for us. Wayne Jenkins, who with Cricket Jack here is the champion wreath maker for the holiday store at Housatonic Valley Regional High School, did a wreath making demonstration because they're sold out of wreaths now. They've got a few more in. I think Wayne made some more while he was there yesterday. But the students were able to watch on remote learning. They did a class in watching Wayne Jenkins make these wreath for us. We took notes. Patrick and I took photos. And we'll have that in next week's paper so you can learn how to make your own wreath. But again, if you know that you want to buy a wreath, call the high school and they'll have some available for you.
What's their number?
824-5123.
860.
860. And leave a message for David Moran, M-O-R-A-N.
All right. Now, a story that I got a call from John Harney last week, and on Friday I did an interview with him. And then over the weekend, I got a call from the person that owns the property at Twin Lakes.
That was an interesting interview with him on your show.
And did an interview with him. And it really opened up a broad topic with protected property, how you go about it when you purchase it, how people in the town feel about it, how people in the commissions feel. And then you've got the Inland Wetlands Commission. But then
there's
you also,
more, too. This is a story that just keeps on giving. This is going to be one of the big stories of 2021. In my opinion, because you've got this very complicated, every week a new layer of interest comes in. So what is essentially happening is, or had looked like, there was a face-off between people who feel that you should strictly observe the law of an easement, which the analogy I keep using is you can't come to an intersection with a red light and go like, nah, I don't think anybody's coming in, go through. It's like the red light is red, you have to stop. So you have John Harney and his mother Elise Harney, who were great friends with Mary Alice White, who owned this property and put a detailed, lengthy conservation easement on the causeway in the channel at the West Twin Lake. And that was actually, tomorrow is the 30th anniversary of that conservation easement being created. And they believe, as many people do and should, an easement is an easement, it's the law, and you observe it to the law. You can't go in and go like, well, you know, it's more convenient for me. Then you have this guy, Jeff Keenan, who owns property across the causeway from it, and the causeway had been in his view shed. And he started having conversations with people who were like, you should buy that property across the channel from you, take down that causeway, it'll improve your view, but it may actually improve the quality of life in the causeway as well. And the Twin Lakes Association, he claims, is supporting him in this, but they're not a holder of the easement, so they, in a sense, don't have standing in this. But then we've just got word that there's a third party in this. So you have the two extremes there. We just got word that there's a third party who's very respected in this area, who will be interviewing, I believe, for our December 17th issue. Who's confidential, so I don't want to get into it at the moment. It's going to be delicate how we present that. But it really is like a novel. It's just unfolding in this incredibly complex, very deep way. And people who love the way that Litchfield County looks should be paying attention to this because it potentially unleashes a precedent for a lot of protective easements that people like Roberta Willis and Andrew Rohrabach and all the land trusts, all these people who are no longer really active in protecting this land, there's the potential for people to come in now and say, like, I don't really like the way that easement's written. You know, let's adapt it a little bit and to maybe get support for it. But at the end of the day, the law is the law. The easement is the easement. And often a lot of money was put into purchasing these easements and to paying for these protective rights and to putting in protections. The Nature Conservancy right now has protection of this causeway. They are not apparently stepping in, as far as we can tell, to protect it, even though there is money set aside for them to do so. We saw 2 weeks ago the Nature Conservancy had passed over the Cathedral Pines easement to the Cornwall Conservation Trust, which had not existed when that easement was created. So there is a group, including the Harneys and Michael Clemens, who believe if the Nature Conservancy is not going to fulfill its obligation to protect these properties, they need to hand those easements over to the local land trusts, but even them, they're aging out, and this is one of those moments, again, as with nursing, as with firefighters, as with ambulance, we need our younger people to come in and step up and go like, oh, I get it. It's beautiful here because we're all paying attention. We all have to work at it. Let's volunteer for the land trust. Let's really care about this.
And Cynthia, presumably you heard the interview with
with Keenan.
Yes.
Fascinating interview. I recommend everybody listen to it. You get a really interesting idea of who he is and what his grievance is, which is, you know,
so just so
that
everybody's
right or wrong.
But here's my problem, and I try to point this out in the interview. The Nature Conservancy is the one that people have to really contact here. They're the ones that hold this easement, and they're the ones that he has been dealing with and talking to. So these people have to get together, and everybody has to go to the Nature Conservancy, and the Nature Conservancy really has to make a decision, and because they've been talked to by both sides now. So this is going to be a hot spot that's going to continue for a while until they can all get together. I guess they're going to get together in January, maybe, when the Inland Wetlands Commission has a meeting then.
So the Monday night this week, there was an Inland Wetlands Commission. It was supposed to be a public hearing. this guy, Jeffrey Keenan, is living in Florida, and I guess his mail was not forwarded to him in time, and he said, I wasn't given enough notice. I'm busy that night. I can't come. But he said, I will meet with you in January. So in theory, there's going to be a public hearing. It's going to be lively. But also, Michael Clemens this week, Janet will talk about him when we get to letters, has a letter saying, you know, some people really need to talk to the Nature Conservancy, because if they're not going to protect that easement, they need to pass it on.
Yeah, that's my basic thing. I mean, you can get mad at this guy all you want, but the Nature Conservancy's got to step into this and step in a big way. All right, let's go on to the Ginger Fest in Gingerbread Fest in Kent, but also we're going to have gingerbread houses in Lakeville and Salisbury and house decoratings. I mean, a lot going on for the holidays.
Boy, is this a great year to bake and learn how to make a gingerbread house. And we've done in the past, because my daughter and I always make little gingerbread houses. We use playing cards as the model for them. It's not that hard to make a good gingerbread house, but it's hard enough. But when you go to Kent and you see these incredibly elaborate, beautiful, you can't believe that many people in this small area are that talented. This year there's something called the Gingerbread Station, which is in the center of town. It's where the Morrison Gallery used to be, right on Main Street. Billy was in there temporarily. Now he's back over on his property across the road. And you can go in, and it's like a little museum of gingerbread houses. And so we've got a beautiful one, actually, that's at Artifacts, which is a retail shop farther back in what's called the Kent Barns. So there are still a few retail locations in town. Always, of course, wear your mask. But, boy, if you want to be inspired, go check these out. And then with that inspiration, if you're a Salisbury resident, there's a gingerbread contest and a house decorating contest coming up.
All right, in Cornwall, trying to do a survey exactly like the survey was done in Sharon on internet gaps.
Right, and again, really thinking about this with kids at home and remote learning and often multiple kids in the house and the parents working. And even if you have good internet, it's definitely taking a blow right now. But as we know, Cornwall, one of the last towns, I think, on planet Earth to get cable, and still some gaps. You know, there is a sense that every student who needs internet is able to get it somehow, but they're trying to put together a survey that goes beyond Priscilla Pavel, the select woman driving through town with her cell phone and just sort of seeing where is their phone links. They're hoping that everybody will participate in this survey in January, but an interesting fight that broke out at the selectmen's meeting, where they were trying to create themselves as like a town body government, and they can't because they didn't want to have to warn all their meetings because, you know, it's harder. So they're proceeding with this as just a citizen group, but they hope everybody in Cornwall will answer the survey.
All right. A couple of meetings coming up in Falls Village that are actually pretty controversial, not controversial, but important.
They're controversial in the sense that there's two very strongly opinionated sides on it, and which is, you know, that's democracy. It's really great. But one is the affordable housing project that we've been talking about for several months over on Lime Rock Station Road, and whether that's an appropriate use for that particular property. Fairly large development there. And then the other one is what used to be the town hall. Back when I was a young reporter, we'd go to all our meetings there. And then National Iron Bank had given the deed to the town to use their former bank building on Main Street as town hall, which is a beautiful building. So the former town hall has had many uses, and they're now looking at different uses for that. I had talked about doing an indoor farm market, which, you know, is great in winter, but I think they dropped that idea, and there's now a retail operation that is thinking about coming in there, which I don't think I'm allowed to say what it is yet, but it would be fantastic if they open there, but a lot of squabbling going on. So two meetings coming up on December 10th, a very early meeting in the morning.
All right. We're only down to about 4.5 minutes left, and I want to get we'll get to Compass. But before we get to Compass, Janet, your editorial on what we were talking about a little earlier.
Right. If anyone is in need of health care, now is the time to sign up for the Affordable Care Act. It is open enrollment until December 15th. And, you know, with all the controversy that has swirled around this act for the past 10 years, people could have forgotten they can still take advantage of it or feel as if it will not last for them because of all the challenges to it. But remember, it has withstood all those challenges and now has a much better chance of reform for those parts of it that need reform, and there is plenty of opportunity to find coverage that is affordable. So we have information here and also on page A2 this week where you can find out how to take advantage of free counseling to help you get through it with Health Pathfinder. You can go to healthpathfinder.org to find out more or read the paper.
And, of course, we do have lots of different letters again this week.
We do. Kathy Harold Marlowe talking about the White House and what it means to the country. When she says the White House, she doesn't mean the person occupying it. She means the White House. So it's a good letter. Michael Clemens, as Cynthia mentioned, writing on the stewardship of easements and how important it is. He is the expert. He worked on these easements in the very beginning and is still around to analyze where we are right now. We also have our columnists, which we hadn't had room for last week and hadn't had a lot of room for over the past few weeks. And so we have Dick Ollis, Carol Asher, Lonnie Carter, and M.A. Duca all talking about really interesting topics.
All right. And you've got stories on the new portal and banner to Salisbury's history with the Academy building. And also, before we get to the compass, the Trixie Strauss Bird Count, December 20th.
Named after beloved Dutchess County resident Trixie Strauss, whose granddaughter Tilly Strauss sometimes draws and writes for us when she's not teaching in Switzerland, as she is now. And a big deal, and you don't have to be an experienced birder. You don't even have to leave your house. You can count the birds at your bird feeder. And if you're not sure what the bird is, just take a picture of it with your phone. And Zach at Audubon can help you identify it. And everybody's invited to log in to the Zoom, which will be fascinating, to hear what people saw. And will be tabulated by really knowledgeable birders from around here.
All right. And want to go out through the what else is on Encompass?
So we've got John Tornack. Actually, we had planned to do this as a gift guide. I think this is the best docking stuffer ever. So John Tornack had designed the iconic New York City subway map and lives here in Cornwall and has done a lot of interesting books about sort of hidden New York. And he's redesigned the subway map and added all this really useful stuff on it, like, you know, like when you get off the subway sometimes and you're like, oh, I can't cross over. I have to actually leave and come in and pay a new fare. So he's got that marked on there. He's got all these interesting things about, like, accessibility, which is important to all of us, whether you've got a sprained ankle or you're pregnant or you've got a kid in a stroller. So a really fascinating new map, and it can be ordered, you know, from sellers, but it can also be picked up at the Wish House in West Cornwall, which is incredibly fun and overloaded with gifts. And we'll have a story on that next week in the new West Cornwall Farm Market indoor, which is great. And then Eric Fenton, like a little quirky documentary series about the town of Falls Village. He started it many years ago with a handheld shaky camera, and now he's got a drone and he's doing beautiful work. And his newest video is out, and it talks about the Falls Village sawmill right down the road from us here, and the Great Mountain Forest with a really interesting chat with Starchild. Really, even if you're not a Falls Village resident, really interesting insights into the life here. And if, for those of us who are fascinated by property transfers, we're trying to get the transfers in from, I think it was July through October, so we're running them a little bit every week and keep planning to make lots of space for them when we keep running out of space because there's so much news. But you can get a start of those last week, some more of them this week, and there will be more next week.
All right, all these stories and more in the Lakeville Journal on your newsstands. You can get it by home delivery and also on the web, tricornernews.com.
And don't miss last-minute shopping, our special banner, Shop Locally.
That's a boy, that's now more than ever.
Yeah, more than ever.
All right, guys, we will speak to you next week.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Take care. That is this week in the Lakeville Journal. And as I said, you can get a hold of them by picking up a paper. Or not picking up, buying a paper, getting a subscription, or at their website, tricornernews.com.